Simply put, we are realistic leaders who are trying to lead better in the real world.
This is the Leadership Forum on Hope FM.
Yes, so we welcome you to the Leadership Forum. We do this every Monday. How are you, Bishop?
Good, thank you. I've been very well.
I wonder today whether it's to us as the body of Christ or to us as a nation. Is there something in your heart before we take matters leadership?
Nothing special that I would say for today, just making observations. Of course, we are very concerned about the stalemate that there is in the Senate. Seven meetings away, they have not been able to resolve that issue. And it's not a very good showing. The other issue that is, for me, is very painful is the allegations, let me call it so, that the COVID-19 monies are being squandered by individuals. That for me was very, very painful because it's like taking somebody's stealing somebody who is really sick and stealing their medicine. Basically, you are saying they can die. It's very sad. Sometime back, I wrote an article and I was saying that time people were just fearing that the monies may be stolen. As the monies were being raised and put together, the fund was put together, people were fearing that, will this money really reach the people? And I said, you know, the picture that came to mind is of these people who, when there's an accident on the road, you find that they run to the accident scene, but it's not to go and help the people who are injured, but to steal from them. And it is a callous thing. It's an inhuman thing to go and steal from a people who are just been involved in a tragic accident. And I think that is the kind of thing that we are seeing, in my view, when we hear that the monies that have been put together to help us with this pandemic have been stolen. Those are people who are heartless. Those are people who have no, their conscience is really dead. For you to steal money that is meant for helping us get over out of a pandemic like the one we are in is to be heartless. And I'm reminded of Elisha's servant, Gehazi.
Gehazi was his name. Yes.
You know, after Elijah, Elisha healed Naaman of his leprosy, and Naaman wanted to pay him. And Elisha said, no, you're not going to pay me. God is not paid. You just go your way. And Gehazi felt, what a loss. I mean, this was a great opportunity to make money.
Yes.
And so he ran back to Elisha, rather to Naaman, and followed him and said, my master has said, no, he has changed his mind. If you could just give us something. And of course, he was given all that Naaman wanted to give. When Elisha learned of it, he said, the leprosy of Naaman is now upon you. And Naaman, Gehazi, actually got that leprosy until he died. And when I hear of people stealing money that is meant to help people in this pandemic, that is the picture that comes to mind. Because God, who is in heaven, who is watching this, cannot let you go free when you actually steal from the sick, when you steal from the dying. It is a wicked thing, and I don't think it will go well with those people if it is true. That's why I call it an allegation, because it's not yet proven. But if it is true, I don't think it will go well with those people. God in heaven cannot be happy with such a kind of a person who is stealing from the dead. So those are the things that have been really have touched my heart this past week. What is happening in the Senate, and then this whole thing of COVID is a terrible thing.
What goes wrong in the heart of a human being, Bishop, for them to do what you just described as stealing from the dead? What goes so wrong?
Of course, our human evil nature, sinful nature, is given to evil. And so greed is one of them. And John writes in 1 John and says that if you love the world and the things of this world, the love of the Father cannot be in you. And he goes ahead to say what that love for the world is, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. And these are the things that drive us to do those kinds of things. The lust of the flesh, passions, you know, things that we just desire. Sometimes people just, they just want to feel good that I have money. Sometimes you don't even know what
it's in the pocket.
It is in the pocket, the account. My account has 100 million. You ask yourself, because I have said here before, I calculated one time that how much 1 billion is, that if you spent 100,000 per day without fail, every day you spent 100,000, it will take you 30 years to finish 1 billion.
Just one.
And people are stealing 5 of them. People are stealing 10 of them. So you ask yourself, what does one want to do with so much money? It is those passions, the lust of the flesh, just to feel good that I have this money. Then the lust of the eyes, you want things and things and more things. You know, you hear a person wants 10,000 acres of land. What do you want to do with 10,000 acres of land? You want 10 skyscrapers. You want cars and houses and what? It is just this craving of the flesh. It is this desire of the eyes for people just to see and say, wow, that is enough for you, you know? If I come to your house and I say, wow, what a house. That fulfills something in you. And that's why people steal. I mean, that's why people steal. Then there's the whole thing of the pride of life, which is connected. You want to be somebody. You want, when you pass around, people know that, Ginte is passing by, you know. And these things drive us to do crazy things. They drive us to do crazy things. When you are given a task to take care of government, public resources, and then you know this is money that is supposed to help people in their sickness, a disease that could clear our nation, and then you go ahead and steal that money, appropriate it for yourself. I know it is the devil, but you have to come up and do something about it.
Yes, yeah. truly. Yeah. Admit you're a sinner. We can begin there.
Yes. Admit you're a sinner, and God will deliver you from it.
Amen. Yeah. Amen. Amen. Well, Bishop, thank you for your observations about the stalemate. So you, in a sense, what you've done is lament. I join you in lamenting. Do you think there can be a way forward, having lamented, and it is good to do that? if you were to advise this our leaders in the political scene, how would you advise them so that we move forward?
Of course, as I said before, the matter at hand is purely political. It's purely political. And political things are very difficult to resolve. So it is not like they don't know what to do or they don't know what is right to do. But when two political positions, opposing positions are taken, and no one is willing to give in, then it becomes very difficult to resolve that issue because now it requires a political resolution. You remember when we are talking about decision making?
Yes, I do.
We talked about the rational. I think they have passed the rational. The rational is there, and if they were willing to take a rational decision, by now it would have been resolved. But when a decision-making is brought at the political level, the rational thinking then disappears. It goes out of the window because even things that make sense, people don't want to follow. They look at things very differently. So it becomes very difficult to help people who are stuck in a political stalemate, it becomes very difficult. So my thinking is that they should really reconsider and just go back to a rational position. Mm-hmm. What is the most practical way of solving this problem? Politically, I may lose or we may not gain as much, but this is the best way to go about it. That is how statesmen are made, you know, people who are willing to make sacrifices for the sake of the people that they lead. Those are how great leaders are made, that they are willing to make sacrifices. But when people have taken a very strong political position, then it becomes very difficult because rationality doesn't apply. So if you just go in and say, this makes sense, why don't we do A, B, C, D? I say, no, but I'm looking at how will it benefit me politically? Because, you know, elections are coming in just a short while. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so the politicians are looking at how will this advance my cause?
How will it give me mileage?
Mileage, yes. Mm-hmm. Because some of the proposals that have been made are quite practical. If you look at them, they're quite practical. Like the Sakaja proposal, in my view, seems to make sense in the circumstances. People are stuck.
Mm. Mm. Thank you. Thank you, Bishop. Can I start us off into our session today, the session that has to do with leaders and followers, with asking you this question from Vicky, who wants to ask, is it correct to say that everyone is a leader in one way or another? Is that correct? Everyone is a leader.
Everyone is a leader at one point or another.
So everyone needs to listen to this.
Because
it
starts from the various, even children who are playing. You know, the Bible says, can two walk together unless they are agreed? That agreement brings in the element of leadership. So if two children or three children are playing out in the compound and they want to organize themselves around a game, one of them has to take leadership and help give instructions, who is going to do what and who is going to do what. There is a leadership role right there. They have no leadership position, but for them to be able to play successfully, there has to be leadership. So even little children, maybe age 3, age 4, you know, they are playing out there. They need a leader from among them. So any place, I say, wherever two or three people are gathered, there must be leadership in their midst, because two people cannot walk together unless they are agreed.
They agree.
So if there are two of us agree, let's walk to town or let's do this or let's do the other, one person must take leadership in that, among the two. So every one of us is a leader at one point or another.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Bishop. Where do you want to take us today after what we discussed last time, whether it's the parameters for an effective innovation? Then we said it looks how it looks like. We talked about it must add value. We talked about it must increase effectiveness. It must increase efficiency. It must promote excellence. And it must reduce cost. And then, of course, the five that really became sort of the highlight, the five points about the leader for today and tomorrow. And the crew in the studio have just done that so very well. Where do you want us to go next, Bishop? People are streaming in and saying, I'm set to learn. Yes.
So those are some of the things that really make businesses to be successful. If you want your business to be successful, the only place where you can remain successful without having those five is a monopoly. You know, if you're in a monopoly, people will come to you because they have to, you know, they have no other choice. So you may not be fun, you may not be friendly, but because you have what they want, they come anyway. But be sure that the day that a competitor enters the market, you are done for, especially if they apply the five F's. So it is Larry Wilson who has said that without innovation and creativity, we can easily practice our present skills and become best players in a game that no one is longer playing. So innovation is what keeps you current. Otherwise, you could find yourself playing a game that people are no longer playing, you know? And Larry Wilson says, if you are not innovative, you become, if you are playing a game that people are no longer playing, it means you are irrelevant. You are irrelevant. You are out of the league. You are playing for yourself. You are singing to yourself. The audience long moved. And I compare this with if you are in this big concert theaters, you know, the limelight is focused on you. You can't see the congregation because all the lights on the congregation, on the audience are dimmed and they are not there. So you see them. So they could easily go away and you could be singing to yourself. You could be talking to yourself. And because you're in the limelight, you think everything is fine. So Larry Wilson therefore is that without innovation and creativity, we could find ourselves continuing to practice our present skills and become best players in a game that is no longer being played. So what we must therefore do is to move into the realm of innovation. Innovation, therefore, is generating great ideas that will help you to overcome and to be ahead of the competition. And you need individuals who can invent, people who can find new ways of doing things, who can be purposeful about doing things differently to help you to move to the next level. Otherwise, you get stuck and you find yourself being either overtaken by your competitors or dying in the field in which you find yourself. One of the ways of being innovative is to benchmark. I know in Kenya, or benchmarking has been abused, especially after the new constitution brought in the MCAs and the new parliament and new government and governors and so on. The number of trips that were made to go and benchmark, it just made that word such a bad word. But benchmarking is one of the ways to become innovative. In my language, we say that if you don't travel, if you don't travel around, you will think your mother is the best cook because that is all the food that you know. But you need to move around and visit places and visit people. Visit your competitors, sometimes either publicly or secretly, not secretly, but without announcing that you are here to benchmark, visit and see how things are done and get to learn from other people and borrow ideas that can apply to your own situation. That is part of innovation, so that your mind is opened up. We call it a learning attitude that we talked about a little earlier. So you have this learning attitude that is open to learning new ideas. And one of the ways is certainly that you visit other people and learn from their experiences, talk with them, and find out how they are doing things. In fact, one can say, puts it as SIS when you are benchmarking, steal ideas shamelessly, SIS. Now, of course, this stealing here is not the kind that will lead you to hell, but the idea that you can, you are not afraid to learn from others. You know, some of us are so proud that we do not want to learn from others. And so we keep doing the things that we are doing when actually you could learn a very new idea from somebody else that is just in your neighborhood or somebody else that is doing a similar thing. Go and ask them, how are you doing this? And how is this working out for you? That is one of the ways of benchmarking. You go and learn from what other people are doing. And so today I want to wrap up that section of innovation and get into some strategies. I want to share with us some strategies for innovation. How different people approach innovation. Let me not even call them strategies. Let me call them approaches to innovation. The different people take different approaches to this whole idea of learning new ideas, doing things differently, or staying ahead in the marketplace. And depending on which approach you take, it could either speed up your growth or be stagnated. So one of the approaches to innovation is called the defender strategy. The defender strategy is a strategy that is focused on systems and structures that guard the things that you have been doing. Your service, therefore, is focused on a narrow, stable market. There are people who have made a decision that this is my area. Remember, we talked about focused. Now they have taken that word focused to another level so that they are so focused that they will not move from what they are doing. It's defender. The reason it's called defender is because you want to guard your space. You want to guard your territory. You want to guard your product, your services, your way of doing things so that people don't encroach in it. You remain the only one with that kind of a way of doing things. This, for example, is where patenting comes. It said, for example, that Coca-Cola has this secret patent to their flavor that no one knows, and they never give it to anybody. It is a secret that even the workers in that field do not know, because they do not want anybody else to produce another Coca-Cola. People have tried, but it just doesn't taste the same, because there seems to be something about the way they mix their chemicals, their ingredients, such that it gives you that unique Coke flavor. So they use a defender strategy. You don't share your ideas. You don't make them public. You keep that space to yourself, and therefore you are focused on that narrow space to make sure that your competition doesn't get into that space. So your primary source of success, therefore, is that you remain the leader in your market. You remain the only supplier, as it were, of that particular product or service, and nobody else, even those who imitate, cannot get into that. I would say that is the same approach initially that Apple used. You would know that when Apple started their products, the Macintosh and other products like the iPhone, the iPod, and all those, they used a defender strategy so that all Apple products were not compatible with any other products in the market. The Apple computers were not compatible with any other computers. If you buy an Apple product, you have to use Apple products all through. Now, eventually it worked against them because interchangeability and interconnectivity became the game, the rule of the game. So when you are so exclusive, then you could be driven out of the market. So eventually Apple had to open, for example, even the softwares like the Microsoft softwares like Word and Excel and so on could not work on Apple computers previously. But they had to get to that place where they had to open that so that these products could work there. Some of you who have used Apple products, you know that even such a small thing as a charger, you cannot just buy a charger on the street and use it to charge your iPhone. It will not work because they use the Defender strategy to stay in the market. It is an innovative way of doing things, but it has its own challenges when you are in a very fluid market where people want flexibility, because it works against that other F of flexibility. So you have the focused, but you have no flexibility. So that is how other products like Samsung and Microsoft have eaten into the space that was previously held by Apple, because they came into that same space offering similar products, perhaps not as high level as the Apple product, but because of the flexibility, interchangeability of these products with other softwares and other things, made them to be more accessible to more people and to be more liked by other people. And so the Defender strategy is a good strategy, but it can get you into a place where you can be driven out of the market. One of the things that the Defender strategy uses is streamlining your administrative system so that you are efficient, you are focused. They tend to use very centralized structures and systems. Everything is very carefully controlled. Products are very carefully controlled. That is usually the Defender strategy. So you find that things are done in a specialist way. And this makes it, therefore, very difficult for any other person to intrude into that space. So the Defender strategy is a strategy that can help you in a market where you want to segment your market. So what, for example, if I go back to Apple, did is that they segmented their market. So Apple is reaching a market that is high-end. Their products are highly priced. They are for high-end people. They have made them like a status symbol so that if you have this particular product, you are known to be a person of a high class, you know? And that's why people, when they are going, again, still using the Apple products, when they are releasing a new phone or a new computer, people actually go out and queue to buy this, be the first to own this new phone in the market. Why do they do that? Because it is a symbol, a status symbol, not because the phone is going to add any greater value to them, but because it has become a status symbol. And that is how Apple position themselves in the market. They position themselves as an exclusive club, as it were, to the people that want that level of recognition. So Defender strategy is a strategy that does work. And you could choose that is what you are going to do. You are an exclusive club of a certain individuals, and you focus in that particular area, and you keep, fine-tuning and refining your processes to produce very high-quality products or very high-quality services. So if you decide to go that route, then what you need to work on is your systems, your structures, your efficiencies, your effectiveness, the quality of products that you are known for this. I remember in the good old days, Total Petrol Station, for example, they used to have this slogan, Total by Choice. Before the regulation of prices, they were used to be among the most expensive in the market. But they said, the people who come to Total Petrol Station don't come because we are cheap. They come because they know we offer quality. And so you come to Total by choice. You don't come to Total by accident. That was a defender strategy, putting your product in such a way that the people who come to you because they believe in what you are doing, the product that you are offering, and you keep refining that product in such a way that you are always ahead of the competition. That is called a defender strategy. So Wamboi, maybe you want to ask a question or something.
First of all, it's a very interesting strategy. The defender strategy just sounds very interesting. And I was thinking of asking you what the balance is at around the time that you were saying it can also stifle flexibility. And then yes. Is that maybe what you preempted when you started talking about segmenting? Is segmenting the balancing act then?
No, the balance in this is mm-hmm. that a defender strategy, sometimes you are too focused mm-hmm. that the competition could come and undercut you. So the balance yes. is that whereas you have this very good product or very good service offering, you must at the same time see what is happening in the market and be able to adapt to what the market is doing still within your own parameters. So the balance, the key word there is some level of flexibility. Okay. Because people who are totally defender strategy sometimes are driven out of the market. And I just gave the example of the Apple products. They basically took that as their approach. They identify their market. They identify the people that they are going to serve. And therefore, their products were made such that they were not compatible with any other product. You could not use any other software other than the Apple software in an Apple computer, you know? But with time, they found that the other people who had taken the flexible and compatibility approach were eating into their market. So they had to also make some little adjustment so that, yes, they are still in the defender zone, but they are now allowing other products to also share. So the key word there is flexibility for if you want to balance so that you stay. So they are still
flexibility.
Apple by and large is still a defender company. It's an exclusive club, if I call it that. But we have learned that
exclusivity.
We need to moderate it with some level of flexibility.
All right, thank you. Great questions, Bishop. You want to take the first one: the role of the church and innovation and governance and policies.
Okay. Yes, I think we have talked about this before. Everything that we have discussed here is applicable to almost any setting of leadership, any kind of organization, whether it is government, church, family, and so on. So in church and religious communities in general tend to adopt the defender strategy. We tend to be very conservative. We tend to maintain what we know and guard that very jealously. And I think we talked about it some time back, actually, when we were starting this whole program, is that when church is not careful, and by church here now, I mean both the local church, the church at three levels. There's a local church, a congregation, there's a denomination, and then there's the body of Christ, universal, anybody called Christian. So at a local congregation level, if you adopt a defender strategy, you must then have a very good product offering. And I think Chalo and his Peter and Martin, they discussed this, that you have to have a very good product offering, almost a monopoly. So the gospel is the same. The Bible is the same. How we present that gospel, how we package that gospel can be very unique. And because of that uniqueness, then you can have a defender strategy. Late last year, or was it actually early this year? I think we have been confused by this corona thing.
It feels like one big day.
Yes, it's like one big day. You don't know what you did last year and what you did this year. So we were in this conference I think it was in the US. I forget, but I think it was in the US. But we had a church from Singapore that had come because this is a meeting that brings together church leaders from across the world just to share ideas of what they are doing. So this church from Singapore came to share with us on youth ministry. What is amazing about this church is that they have positioned themselves as a youth-only church.
Wow.
Yes, that's how they have positioned themselves. So their oldest person is like 21. In fact, they
pride themselves.
It's a teens church. Their strategy is to make sure that their average age is 19. Average age. When they take their statistics of all who attend church and divide by the numbers and find what is the average age, their strategy is that their age average should be 19. So because of that, the way they have positioned themselves is that everything is done in a youth way. The presentation was so amazing. Their elders, their deacons, their leaders are all young people, age 15, 16, 19, 20, 21. The oldest is 27. Amazing. But they
and
have
the pastor, so, how old is the pastor? I'm just
the pastor started,
curious.
The pastor started at 21. Now I think he's 38 or thereabout.
Okay.
You know, but they are like the oldest in the church. But all the leaders are young people. It's amazing that that church now, which started with about 500 young people, has now grown to over 20,000, and they are all young people. They showed us the building that they have put up in Singapore. It is out of this world. I mean, even the design of it, and it's just out of this world. You need to see it to, I can't describe it. It's like John going to heaven and trying to describe to us how heaven is like, you know? It's just amazing. And so their approach to ministry, which is a very innovative thing, is again a defender strategy in that they do not want that space to be encroached by older people. So the people, we ask them, what do you do with the people who grow up into this? They
exactly.
say, well, since we started.
That was in my mouth. Yes, I started with you. I was 18. Now I'm 29, for example. What do you do with me?
You're 30-something. So they say, For every one person who grows into their 30s or 20-something, they must bring at least five young people who are younger, you know, that will balance that average age. So if you have 30 or 40, then see how do you get your average age to 19? It's by bringing several younger people.
So then I don't go away.
You don't go away, but you're still here. But our average age then doesn't move. In fact, they said, I think two or three years ago, their average age moved to about 21, and they were very concerned. They had to sit back, sit down and think, how do we bring our average age down? So really, they have become like a monopoly in that field. And so they can use that kind of a strategy. But it requires a lot of creativity, a lot of innovation. And those people are just amazing. They're just amazing. they brought some young people to just give us their testimonies of how the church has touched their lives. And you can see people who are very excited, young people, very excited about God and about the Lord and how they do Bible study, how they do outreach and so on. In fact, we were just about to send our pastors there to benchmark because they have a benchmarking they have a benchmarking program where they allow churches to come in and see how they do things and so on. So we were just about to do that because that's an area that I must confess, as a church in Kenya, we are weak. So you could organize yourself that way, and this is something that you can do in any field, like I said. Governments, just like church, is also conservative. So our strategy in government is always defender, because one of the things that is so clear about the defender strategy is that you streamline structures, systems, policies, guidelines, and you do whatever you are doing, and you don't deviate, you don't go outside of that narrow field. And that's how government operates. So it is very difficult for governments to adopt to new ideas. Government systems tend to be the same old thing. Now, what has happened is that with globalization, because previously government had no competitors, you know, you are a Kenya government, you're a Kenya government. You do your thing and there's no competition. Now, with globalization has brought competition within governments, within nations, so that if you do not adopt to new ways of doing things, if you don't offer new products and new ideas, you could be left behind, just like a company. So now governments are also coming up with innovation. You see what is happening between China and the US, because China was a very, because of their communist background, it is basically a dictatorship, if we use that word loosely. Their style is not a democracy. They're not a democracy. And so everything is centralized. Everything is run from the top. The leader speaks and things are done. Now, that kind of a strategy doesn't lend itself to innovation. And so for a long time, the democratic countries, capitalistic countries like Europe and Western Europe and US were really the ones that were leading in terms of innovation, in terms of products and so on and business. Then China changed within their own system of this communism. They brought in innovation. And I think because of their numbers, they have been able to get into that innovation space, and their numbers give them good human capital that then is able to bring a cost of production so way down. And China has literally swept the world in terms of services and products. And so Europe and America are very unhappy. So you can see, therefore, that competition has now come into government. So what has happened is that even governments now have to be innovative. Even governments have to be creative. You have to think, because take even East Africa. Kenya has been the leader in East Africa for a very long time. We are still the leader in terms of volumes of products, and because we were just ahead. But that space is being eaten very fast. A country like Rwanda that just came up the other day has gone way ahead. Ethiopia is coming. Unfortunately, because of the things that have been happening there recently, they may be slowed down. But Ethiopia has taken an innovative approach to running their country, and it is moving. In fact, as of last year, they were said to be among the top five fastest growing economies in the world.
Not in Africa, in the world.
You know.
Wow.
So
wow.
What that tells you is that even as a government, as a country, you can't afford to just sit there and do nothing.
No.
You will be overrun. Your people will be without jobs. So you may find that everything that we are consuming in our country, I was reading a story yesterday of my part of the world in Kisumu. We were known
what
for
about
fish.
It?
Fish.
Fish.
My sister, fish. And it's going to lunchtime. You know?
What are the story and, about?
And I read a very, very sad story. There's this Chinese company that has set camp in Kisumu.
No.
It's called the East Africa Seafoods. I think that is what it's called. And they import fish from China to Kisumu.
That cannot be. You can't do that. Who does that?
That is what is happening. So what has happened
in Kisumu?
In Kisumu, they have
who is buying?
Factory in Kisumu. So the probability that if you buy fish in Kisumu, you'll be buying a Chinese fish is very high. They are the ones who are supplying fish. They are doing filleting. They are doing all the things. So the revenue on fish that used to come to Kisumu has gone to China. It is fish made in China, you know?
They are not fishing.
No. They are bringing
the fish from China.
Fish from China in containers. They are bringing
Why are the people in Kisumu buying that? What is different?
It's cheap.
Oh.
It's cheaper. It is cheaper to buy the Chinese fish than to go to the lake and bring fish. So the fishermen, of course, this is frozen and so on. We can say many things about quality. But when you just want food, you just want food. Yeah, you just want fish. So what has happened is that the local fishermen cannot compete because the Chinese fish is cheaper than the local fish. So they have been literally driven out of business. And that is what is happening with globalization. So if the Lake Victoria people imagined that they had monopoly of fish supply, the Chinese have come in and taken that space. And you can replicate.
Because especially that question had come in also asking about government policies. I'm just wondering, innovation just a little bit aside, shouldn't government policy kind of protect the Kisumu fishermen from the Chinese imports?
I saw somebody asked something about how do you do a defender strategy within a corrupt government or innovation, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think our biggest undoing is corruption. Because a defender strategy, what it would have done is to empower the local fishermen.
Yes.
So that they can be able to produce fish. Because what China does, and I have been there myself and told by the Chinese themselves, the government supports their business people so that they can compete at the international level. For example, The philosophy they use is that instead of giving handouts to people who are unemployed, mm-hmm. that money that you'd have used for handout, use it to provide markets for their products. So the government's strategy is to go out into the world and look for markets for their products. That is what mm-hmm. they do. So the uh-huh. fishermen of China can do their farm fish farming, but the government goes out and looks for a market.
It
comes to Kenya and negotiates for a fish market. And where is this station? In Kisumu, you know?
where they are used to eating fish.
Not only used to eating, fish is then imported in quotes or exported from Kisumu to the rest of Kenya. So you in Nairobi, you imagine that this fish has just come from Kisumu. So it is Kisumu fish. But it's not Kisumu fish. It is Kisumu via, it is China via Kisumu.
That's the real issue, but it is making me not feel nice. I don't know.
I'm glad you're not feeling nice. I'm still trying to answer the question about government.
Okay.
Because government must be also innovative if you're going to survive. Previously, we were monopolies. Each government was a monopoly, as it were, because you had your specific market. For example, Kenya, we supply flowers, we supply coffee, we supply tea, we supply mm-hmm. tourism and all that. And we were kind of a monopoly in those sectors. Now, when the world opens, other people are supplying flowers and other people are supplying coffee and other people are supplying tea and other countries have opened up for tourism. Mm. So if you are not innovative, you get stuck.
Yes.
We were in the US with my family, and we were one of the days our host said, let's take you out, see around the country and so on. And we went to this museum place, and they have several places you can see in that place. You know, here when you hear of a museum, you know what pictures come to your mind. So we went to this museum place, and one of the places which was a high attraction we were told you have to go and see is to go and see some grass. So they have built these towers of wooden towers. You climb up there and you watch. And right there before you is nothing but ordinary grass bush that you can find anywhere in Kenya. Unkempt, unkept. It is, we asked ourselves, why would anybody pay money to come and see this? But people are paying money to come and see it. We have so many places in our country that could be developed and become major tourist attractions. And I'm thinking to myself, we are paying money for nothing here, absolutely nothing. And then bus loads that were coming to that place to see nothing, but it's only because it has been developed, it has been, you know. So I go to 14 Falls. There's a beautiful scenery there, but it's not,
I know.
It is not developed for tourism. I can tell you so many things. And the world is becoming very competitive. So nations have to position themselves. Mm-hmm. Dubai was created from zero as I was alive, you know, in my lifetime.
A great innovation, that one.
Yes, they just started from zero in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Now it is like the capital of the world. The best everything is in Dubai, the tallest building in the world, the largest what, the biggest what, all these things. And this place is a desert. And now you go there, you see lush green sidewalks and what? I mean, amazing.
Innovation.
Innovation. So nations also have to be innovative. So as a country, we cannot afford to remain doing things the same old way. We must think, we must break down our systems. I've been very happy with some of our government departments and the innovative ideas they're coming up with. Like just recently, the judiciary launched a digital system of doing things that now you can lodge your cases and all that. Police the other day have launched a digital way of reporting cases and the OB numbers and so on, so that files that used to get lost don't get lost anymore. But these are good beginnings, but have to be taken to another level. Wow. I think I've given you a very long answer to a very short question.
Thank you. We appreciate. And that was our Bishop.
This is the Leadership Forum on Hope FM.